The Breakfast Club.
You can hang out with Adam White, who's ready to roll on another day on The Breakfast Club. Good morning, Whitey.
Good morning, Daniel. We were talking before about captaincy with Taylor Adams potentially.
Possibly.
Taking over from Scott Pendlebury. There could be a scenario where some of the biggest names in the game will hand over the reins, probably in a succession period where I can't remember. Because if you could, we know Trent Cotchin is handing it over. We talked about that yesterday.
We did.
And I mentioned Joel Selwood might do the same. If Scott Pendlebury does it as well, they are ornaments to the game, those three.
They are.
All of them premiership players. One of them a premiership captain. Yeah, it'll be interesting.
Are you suggesting that there's winds of change in leadership at AFL clubs building up to season 2022?
Yeah, I mean, there could be others as well. Stephen Canelio.
Well, he's still got to be there to be captain.
He still has to be there, and obviously his last 2 years have been curtailed by injury.
But curtailed, it's almost, good use.
It's almost like the team has moved on from Stephen Canelio, and that sounds a bit harsh, but they kind of have. And even though he came back towards the end of the year, but you remember the prized signature of him when he re-signed and committed, it was seen as such a massive thing.
At the restaurant.
And then has hardly played since, lost his position in the team as a fit player in 2020, and then obviously missed most of this year through injury. And so there's another one.
Yep.
Jack Zeebel at North Melbourne, would they continue with
sacking him?
I'm asking the question.
I'm just hearing you say.
He still hasn't signed for next year yet, Jack.
Well, he's going to need to be there. There you go. It's a little step he's going to have to overcome. A little hurdle.
Yeah. There's a few there that just to contemplate.
Leadership winds of change in the AFL. Perhaps Whitey's all over at early doors, up and about. You've been thinking about this all night?
No, not really. It was only when you said it before.
Righto.
About Taylor Adams maybe taking the job on at Collingwood.
I'm going to ask him about that. You know, he won't say that Scott's going to hand it over or that it's his job in the waiting, but that's the reality for our man Taylor. That's what we do. We surround ourselves with excellence around here on The Breakfast Club. We've got two grand final captains part of the team, haven't we, really? We're going to have premiership captain.
We will have a premiership captain.
That's good business.
It's very good business.
That's good stuff.
We've had, over the time, we've had a couple of premiership players that have come through, certainly a lot of grand finalists that have come through the inner sanctum, but we're definitely going to have a premiership player coming out of the inner sanctum this year, and we'll definitely have a premiership captain.
And that possibly will be the same person.
Possibly. And we could also have a Brownlow medalist, if it's Marcus.
Well, yes, Sunday night, of course, the Brownlow. We'll be keen to see how the Bont goes. Yes, there's a bit to look forward to for him. Now, yesterday, speaking of leadership, we had the poll, the Trent Cotchin standing down Richmond situation, and we put the options out for who should take over from the Tigers. Now, we went with, R&D, whoever R&D was in the background, went with Dustin Martin, Jack Riewoldt, Dylan Grimes, or other, let us know.
And I went with Jack Graham, and he wasn't on the...
Well, he was other, let us know.
Yeah, that's disrespectful to Jack.
Well, not really, because other only got 21% anyway in the poll.
Well, I guarantee you, if Jack Graham was an option, he would have got more than other.
No, I don't think so. I don't think so, because he's part of the others, 21%. Dylan Grimes came through as the likely successor, according to the audience yesterday, 36% of the votes. So that's more than 21 with everyone. So he would have. He's there. Dustin Martin was 31%, and your mate Jack Riewoldt, 12% with the other. So that's what the RSN audience told us on Twitter yesterday, that Dylan Grimes should be the next captain of the Tigers.
I'd be comfortable with that as well.
I'd be very comfortable.
But I'd still go with Jack Graham.
It was a concern that Andy Goodwin got a mention. That was a concern.
Andy Goodwin
got a vote, which I wasn't expecting yesterday. Nonetheless.
Jaron Geary is another captain at St Kilda that might not be captain in 2022.
You're sacking him as well.
Pensioning
him.
Why are you sacking
people?
No, I just...
Why do you hate footballers?
Well, I just think it... I think... I don't know what the stats would be on the amount of changing captains from one year to the other, but we might have a new record going into 2022.
Well, we've got a lot of double ups too.
And I don't like those.
This is a surprise. Sam Doherty, his health situation, he might want to take the responsibility away there at the Blues and let Cripper just take it.
So who's the captain at Sydney?
Josh Kennedy and Dane Rampey and have they got seven or something?
Well, this is the thing. I think they keep changing all the time. I think it's Luke Parker and Josh Kennedy. And I think it was Dane Rampey.
Was it?
I don't know. I'm not sure. The Grant Thomas had the time where they just change it every year.
Well, at least you knew. At least there was only one.
Yeah.
No, it's a good point about Sydney. Because, and the multiple ones do, just from a layperson's involvement in the club, it does. If you've got too many, you forget. If you've got a single point of reference, it's like, I'm with you on this. Yeah, a single point of reference is a very good thing. Doesn't matter what industry or organisation you're in, a single point of reference at the top of the chain is a very good thing. And I think the best model, but what would I know? What would I know? Hey, what I do know, Adam White, is that James Packer is selling a yacht.
Yes, it's quite an expensive yacht, Daniel. You buy a suburb for the price of that yacht.
The yacht, which happens to be 288 feet. Oh, no, that was the old yacht. That was the old yacht. This is 108 metres. It's a giga yacht. It's not a mega yacht. It's a giga yacht.
Right.
It's 108 metres long. So just picture the running track.
Yeah.
The 100 metre final.
Is it as big as Rammer's houseboat?
It's just underneath Rammer's houseboat. 108 metre yacht that he sails around the globe. It's got a nightclub.
Of course it does,
because you need to know, and a hair salon, because you need to be worried about your hair before you get to the
so
nightclub.
So as a nightclub, so is it like, you know how Britney was sort of a resident at Las Vegas? Is Mariah Carey a resident on the boat just doing a sort of a performance every night?
I don't think Mariah got that in the settlement. Right. I don't think she got the boat in the settlement. The price of the boat is $283 million. $283 million for our man's boat. Now, that seems a lot for a vessel on the water.
For a yacht.
Well, it's a giga yacht, remember? It's not just a yacht. It's a giga yacht.
For a boat.
What I do love about it, now, this is very, very important. This is very, very important. It does come with excellent sea views.
Oh, that's good.
that's the report today. This mega yacht worth $250 million comes with sea views. Thanks for that. Oh, I'm glad that you got that. That's the first thing I would have been asking. Where are the sea views? My goodness. I don't think I'll buy that.
Where does it moor?
Blairgowrie.
Park.
Blairgowrie Marina or Mount Martha Marina. Safety Beach.
Oh, jeez.
I'm not sure to get into the Safety Beach entrance. It's a significant piece of machinery. Anyway, if you've got $283 million spare, you might want to give James a call because it's got a nightclub and sea views. So we'll see how that goes.
Do they play quoits on the deck?
Well, I imagine so. I mean, who wouldn't? Who wouldn't want to play quoits on the boat, the $283 million boat? Are your kids musical?
I think they might be. I'm not sure. Jemima certainly is. Like she likes to sing and stuff.
I'm thinking they might be because you're a fast walker. You're a walker and you're a fast walker. And there's research to back up my suggestion here. Fast walking parents may boost the tempo of their infant's natural musical rhythm, researchers say. Uh-huh, listen. A study has found that 10-month-old babies had a faster drumming rhythm after being carried for 10 minutes at a quicker walking pace than those with slower moving parents. So if you're a slower moving parent...
Well, you're a fast walker.
I'm a very fast walker. Very fast. In fact, people who walk slow really annoy me.
We, of course, we blew up Double Birdie Dave that day.
Double Birdie Dave.
We were fast walking.
Well, I had to break him. I had to break him. He's driving me bananas. And he really walks slow. So that makes me angry. Infant spontaneous motor tempo is differentially impacted by carrying experience dependent on the tempo at which they were carried. So if you carry one of those, you know, baby carrier things.
The baby Bjorn.
Baby Bjorn type situation. These days, they're more of a... little chess cocoon that they throw around these things, like a little sack. A little sack you throw over your shoulders. They're very different, the ones that I I see now the ones I used. Our results suggest that an experience generally regarded as passive on behalf of the infant may be shaping their earliest musical tendencies. So all the parents out there, new parents out there, if you've got any bubs that you're carrying around the streets when you go for your walk, because that's all you're allowed to do.
Oh, no, but it could change. You could walk 10Ks from tomorrow.
Yeah, but you can still walk. You're not going to run with the baby, so you're just going to walk. But just walk faster, and you'll be able to increase the aptitude of your children's musical talents.
Is fake news?
It's not fake news, Ross. It absolutely is not. That's research. I don't know where the research came from, but it's definitely research. Interesting stuff.
Unusual start to the day, Daniel.
Well, I think it's important information, because music is possibly the greatest gift of life. After life itself, I think music is one of the great gifts. Yep.
I'll put a cover drive up there a bit higher than musical gift.
But no. No. Anyone can play a cover drive? Well,
no, that's not true.
Clearly I can, so that's important. That's important. Now, Nathan Jones announced his retirement officially yesterday. We knew that was coming, but he announced it yesterday. Christian Salem had a bit to say about that from the D's perspective. Let's have a listen.
It's obviously sad to see him retire, but and the circumstances that he did do that is pretty unfortunate in terms of the situation we're in terms of COVID and whatnot and having to fly back for the Twins. But, you know, he's a massive part of the footy club, always has been, always will be. He's had the Twins, he got there in time. I think he made it by 3 or 4 hours, so it's good to see him and the family doing well.
His timing was good, wasn't it?
His timing was magnificent. Well, Jerry was able to hold on. Hold on, I'm thinking.
Yeah, but we were sort of, well, we were only talking to Max about it on Tuesday, and he was saying he was trying to convince him to stay.
Selfish Max. Very selfish man. Odie and Dove were the names of his children that were born, the twins that were born to he and Jerry in the early hours of the other morning.
Excuse me, can you say that again?
Odie and Dove. Odie Rain and Dove Margot were born on Sunday morning to the Joneses. And they are keeping up with themselves.
Right.
Odie and Dove, good luck to them. Well done to Jonesy. A fantastic career.
How do you spell Odie?
O-D-I-E. Now, I don't know if that's the same way you spell Odie in Garfield. I thought he was just ODE. I don't know. Anyway, congratulations to the Joneses and congratulations to Nathan Jones for a magnificent career at the D's. I'm going to speak to David Neitz, of course, another 300-game champ of the D's a little bit later on this morning. Maxie did tell us of his love and admiration for Jonesy earlier in the week, and he wants people to remember him for what he's brought to this new generation of Melbourne as opposed to being a part of the old Melbourne, which sucked. He didn't say that. I just said that. The other day we spoke to Max Gawn, the captain of Melbourne. We know that they're in the grand final next Saturday night at Optus Stadium. Let's check down the other champion who's going to be leading his team out there for the big one. Marcus Bontempelli is the captain of the Bulldogs. He's part of our Inner Sanctum teams, and he joins us on The Breakfast Club. Marcus, good morning.
Good morning, gents. Hope you're all going well. It's great to be back on the air with you.
It is great to have you with us, because that means you're still alive, Bont. This is good business. You're into another grand final. How does that sit with you?
It's definitely, you know, pretty special to, you know, I guess reflect on just that and on being a part of the build-up and being in another one. And, you never know when your next opportunity is going to come up to potentially play in one and just, you know, have to feel really excited about the occasion and what's to come.
Could you believe how it unfolded? The build-up, the dramatic build-up, you weren't allowed to train and when you got into Adelaide, you had to get there late, all that sort of stuff. And you get out there and you blow them away, the power, in the first 20 minutes of football. Could you believe what was happening?
At the time, you know, definitely it felt like, you know, clearly the game was unfolding the way that we wanted to and we clearly started the game exactly how we wanted to, you know. On a travel away from home, particularly at Adelaide Oval, where the crowd can have such a big say in the game. We wanted to start the game well, and clearly we managed to do that. But you're so in tune with the game, and although you know at different points you've got a bit of a margin, you do your best not to allow yourself to get too caught up in, you know, what the score is and almost try and forget about the scoreboard. But it was probably one of those games that by the end of it, you sort of felt a little bit shocked at the result. But it certainly didn't shock me in terms of how we played and, you know, definitely what I think we're capable of.
I'm keen to find out what you thought of all the planning. I'm sure there's weeks when you go into a game and you've got your plan in place and
you think, oh, yeah, that could probably work. And you go out and you do it, and, and it either does or it doesn't. Going into this game, there's clearly a lot of planning went into place to take away the power strength, to get in the way of Aaliyah earlier so he couldn't mark everything, bring the ball to ground, all that sort of stuff. Did you walk into it thinking, you know what, this will bloody work. We just got to do this, and this will work.
Oh, I think every week you're confident in what you're planning for and each other and what you sort of aim to deliver for each other. And you mentioned Aaliyah. He's clearly a pivotal player for the Power and particularly for their back line. That was probably quite obvious, the planning to try and nullify his ability to intercept and I guess repel a lot of our attack. And our forward line were the ones that probably ultimately set the game up for us with our ability to obviously get the ball in there. But with the lads in, Mitchie Hannon, obviously Aaron Norton and, the smaller types, Timmy English, to be able to compete in the air and then probably allow our, inside sort of source work come to the fore. We just managed to, get on the end of a few really early, which definitely helped set the game up for us. But the planning is something you always feel pretty confident about going into, but it was great that it played out, the way that we wanted it to.
I'm interested, Marcus, in the what appears to be a bit of a siege mentality that Luke Beveridge has got going. It's kind of like you guys against the rest of the world with things that you've had to cope with through the last few weeks. Is that a bit of a theme?
It is. Sometimes you just got to take what's right in front of you and use that as inspiration. You can go searching and looking for other reasons or other ways to inspire each other, and Bevo's always great with a theme or two and how he sets the game up. But I think, the easiest theme was the one right in front of us with regards to the fact that we had to do it a bit harder than anyone else, and obviously we've still got a ways to go in regards to that. But it was sort of an easy way to, use that as motivation, that we weren't given any allowances or things weren't made easy. And we'd make that or use that to our advantage. So it's definitely become something for us that we've run with the last couple of weeks.
Has he not so much surprised you, but the ability of him to inspire? I mean, he's had this group now for a while. He's a premiership coach, as you're a premiership player. But to continually reinvent himself as coach to give you that extra motivation? Because from what I understand, he's been inspiring a lot of people over the last two or three weeks.
Not surprised, only because, he's been, the coach of mine and many others for a fair amount of time now. And that was obviously one of the things that I think we worked out, early on was one of his really big strengths of being able to intertwine, not just playing the game as a privilege, but then, the layers to what you can potentially achieve with a greater story or something that goes above and beyond just being, lucky enough to play the game. And he does spend, a lot of time, trying to find different, cues and different things that will get, the whole group up, but inspire individuals. And ultimately, he continues to find ways to orchestrate, the different emotions that you want to bring out in these big games. And ultimately, it all comes back to the collective agreement on being able to potentially be a part of something, bigger than yourself and being able to use those little stimuluses to continue to find ways to get yourself up and about for a big game is something he does really well.
So will it happen again for the grand final? Obviously, Melbourne's been in Perth for a bit longer, and from all reports, you're staying like a flag motoring or something like that, a youth hostel. That's very different to the Melbourne situation. Can you keep using that as motivation in quarantine?
This place is pretty nice. It's not a motel inn or anything like that. But you do sometimes think about, how can we continue to ride the wave and even maybe set up a few little things that make the boys get a bit off and set up little traps and whatnot to continue to ride the wave so that they don't get too comfortable or start to think, oh, this isn't too bad compared to the last couple of weeks. And ultimately you just got to ride the wave a little bit and sort of be willing to just enjoy it and go with the flow, and whatever happens happens. But obviously there's a bit more time with regards to the build up to this game that you're also just trying to deal with and enjoy as well. So I will continue to support the group, you know, however they need to, and look for different elements of how to, you know, keep us focused, but also, you know, enjoying the ride. And Bembo, I'm sure, will have different elements to be able to introduce as the week goes on.
Do you think having the experience, I think there's 10 of you or 11 of you from the 2016 Premiership in the team, Bond, do you think having the experience of half the squad, effectively half the team, will be a benefit, or is it nice going in sort of raw and not really knowing, like Melbourne will go in on Saturday week?
Yeah, it's, you know, of course, we've, you know, now we'll be experiencing, you know, both sides of it. And I think it definitely helps, you know, in terms of us being able to probably share some of our experiences and dealings with it, and the differences that come with, you know, grand final week and you know, the interaction you get and you know, the messages and the things that are a bit different about grand final week, and obviously the build up and just those different elements that make it different and special and sometimes a bit, you know, consuming, and just being able to enjoy it for what it is and not, you know, have yourself, you know, shutting yourself off to it or overindulging all the same. Just enjoy what it is and you know, take as much in it as you can. And so I do think it will help. It will be, you know, handy in being able to share those experiences. But I think we've got a good mix who, you know, haven't experienced it before, and they'll enjoy every bit of it too.
What about the break in between, the week off in between? You've had such great momentum in the last couple of weeks and played really good footy, almost, you know, backs to the wall a bit to get yourself over the line or give yourself a theme, and as you talked about before. I'm sure it'll enable some of your players to get a bit fitter and be right for selection for Saturday week. But you've had such great momentum. Do you think it could halt it, or are you pretty happy that there's a bit of a spell before the big one?
Oh, it definitely has its benefits, like you said, from a, I guess, a physical freshen up and a mental freshen up perspective. We've, you know, obviously been sort of here, there and everywhere over the last couple of weeks, which, you know, I think I felt like, you know, after the last sort of couple of days, we've had a good, you know, a good spell after what was a big couple of weeks. And I guess we're trying to view this week, not as much as a week off, but definitely, you know, a game off, but a good opportunity to tune up some of those aspects of our game that were, you know, maybe not as flashy in the game, which there were parts to it that we could do better. And obviously, you've got an eye towards what you know is coming in regards to what, you know, Melbourne's capable of and obviously their game too. So you look at it as more of a, oh, this is how we're treating it as a tune-up week, opportunity to freshen up the legs, freshen up the mind. But when we're training and doing what we need to, we're churning it out at the best possible clip as we can, and then just continue to enjoy the downtime, continue to enjoy the build-up and prepare as we need to for next week.
Is there a Steph Martin effect for you guys? I mean, I thought his inclusion and the way he played his role, which allowed Tim English to play a bit more forward, stretch the defence of the power. You know, who knows, it probably stretched the defence of the D's too on Saturday week if you get to that point. Is there an impact that he brings with him, let alone the fact that he's more than a capable player in that position?
Well, he brings experience. He's obviously played a lot of football at the level. He brings, a predictability when you've got, you know, someone like Steph, who we obviously started the season with and obviously had a really big impact around what we're able to do in the early parts of the season. And then we lost him for a little bit. And to have him back definitely gives you a predictability around the ruck side of things. And obviously we've had, you know, Tim up there at different points, Lewis Young, who's done, you know, who did an enormous job for us as well in those first couple of weeks to try his best to curtail that part of the game and give us that predictability. But, you know, with Steph, who's played so much football, he gets it. He knows exactly what we want and need from him, and he's happy to deliver it. It does definitely have an impact, and we just need to go to work around the ball to continue to, I guess, vindicate his hard work that he's put into coming back into the team.
Saw a release from the Melbourne Victory the other day from the chairman, Anthony Di Pietro, a bit of an update on proceedings there at the Victory. And he told us that Caroline Carnegie has taken over, well, continuing the role as managing director on a permanent basis. Now, I want to find out what's happening at the Victory. Firstly, congratulate Caroline on the role. And she joins us. Caroline, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks very much.
Great to have you on the program with us, and great to get an update from the Melbourne Victory. We were talking before, in fact, the last couple of days, Caroline, about the Melbourne Victory and the fact they've been very, very quiet on the media front, the Victory. It's been a challenging period, no doubt. How are things looking at the Victory headquarters at the moment?
Yeah, look, I think they're looking really good. When you say it's been a challenging on the media front, I think there's a tendency when you don't have a good news story to not come out with anything.
Yes,
but we're working really hard heading into this season to actually change that approach and just communicate a little bit more openly with everybody, regardless of where we're sitting. Of course, we've got a new coach and an almost in completely new men's football department, which is really exciting at the club at the moment.
So tell us a bit about that. I mean, we know that Tony Popovic is the coach, but you've got a new director of football as well, Johnny Didalitza, who's well known to A-League fans through the journey. How big a role is that going to be for Johnny?
Yeah, I think it's a really big role. So, you know, Tony's doing an amazing job coming in with the football side, and what John's focusing on is making sure that we've got, you know, a consistent approach to football across the club. So our youth teams, our men and our women, and it's fantastic. So we're leaving no stone unturned. We're reviewing everything football and administration related. And we're not just doing things the way we've done them before if it's not the best way for the club moving forward.
It sort of, I think it caught everybody by surprise, Caroline, that it was only a couple of years ago that you're the champions, and then to have the season that you had last year, that's not what happens with the Victory. So I'm interested, when you do a review, are you reviewing just the business, or are you even reviewing the culture and what Melbourne Victory actually stands for?
Yeah, the whole lot. We're reviewing everything. So, you know, I had this conversation with someone the other day, and I think when you, and we've always liked to think of ourselves as leaders, but when you think of yourself in that way, sometimes you can get a little bit complacent about the way you do things, and we're not going to be doing that any longer, and it's not an intentional thing, and we've got some great roots to start from, but we're reviewing the way the administration works, the culture of the place. We've had a lot of turnover in the past few months, which I think has been a really good thing. And, you know, with Tony coming in and the entirely new football department, it's made a really big difference. And I'd say we're in a really good space at the moment.
And I've got to say, I'd love to commend you on your social media strategy around what the Victory means to people and some of those little stories, those content pieces on social media. I think it's almost like a bit of a realignment of what the football club actually is to people and to Victory people.
Yeah, thank you. I think that's right. I mean, our season was terrible and we can't hide behind that, but we do have to move on and look onward and upwards. And our marketing team have had a huge focus on how we make sure we sort of remind people of all the great moments that we've had in our relatively short history, and the direction that we want to go in to bring them on the journey in the future. So I think they're doing a great job at doing that.
Caroline, does it sting a little bit that you went through your rough patch at the same time that Melbourne City became the champions? Does that make it harder and, I guess, almost double your efforts to make sure you right the wrongs as quickly as possible?
Yeah, look, I mean, whether it's Melbourne City or, you know, any other club, we want to be at the top. So we have a great working relationship with them, but, of course, we'd prefer that the results were turned upside down from last season.
Well, I'm sure the Victory fans would be pretty happy about that too. So what's Tony Popovic looking for in terms of personnel to bring to the club to change those fortunes?
Yeah, I think with the new footy department, we're already starting to see those sorts of things. There's a lot of science behind the way Tony and John and the rest of the department are, you know, looking at the team, you know, we're bringing on board, we've got some new dietetics partners. We're also bringing on board some mental health specialists to help. So we're sort of leaving no stone unturned in terms of the team that we can support Tony and the players with. And we'll extend that into our W League squad as well, who, of course, had a fantastic year, but just trying to make sure that we get the same consistency across the club.
I wonder what it's like down at Brad Johnson's neck of the woods. He's a Bulldogs champion. He's a dominant force is what he is. And he's got sun shining on that bonce of his through the window. Good morning, Jono.
G'day, Half. G'day, Whitey. How good is the day? Honestly, it's beautiful to wake up. Grand final's still a week away and a bit, but we're getting set, Half. If the weather stays like this, it'll be nice, mate. It's beautiful at the moment.
Now, we're getting some feedback off the SMS in the last couple of days, Jono, about... about the pre-grand final bye as opposed to the pre-finals bye. Now, we know that we're in challenging times at the moment, so there's a little caveat on all of this, but... we're experiencing the pre-grand final one, and we've had the pre-finals one. Where are you leaning to in terms of perfect world scenarios going forward for the competition? What would you like to see?
Well, thinking about it in terms of... I get caught a little bit both ways, Half, because in the past I've been, okay, it's a battle of the fittest, and you get a bit of luck along the way. So therefore, I've said we should roll right through this from start to finish, and that's just the ability to... You know, as I said, have a bit of luck with injuries, have that mental ability to push through adversity when things get tough and tired and some big finals. But I've probably relaxed on that a little bit, to be honest with you. And I'd probably sit there now and probably go, okay, to get to play right through to the prelims, I like this. I like the fact that if we have a player that may have had been out with concussion last week out of the game, he still gets the chance to play in that grand final, and we get to see the two best teams fit and healthy for the big dance. So I would play the season right through. I'm happy with this bye at this current time to get everyone fresh, ready to go into a big grand final. The spectacle is going to be amazing, but outside of that, the players are going to be super fresh in terms of what they've dealt with all year to get themselves ready to go to give us the best spectacle in terms of the game.
Well, considering what we got in the prelims from the winners... It's got all the hallmarks of being an absolute cracker from a grand final game perspective. And with that week off, you would think that it would enable all players to be at their absolute peak to put on the best show on the biggest stage of all. I mean, we talk about the grand final being the biggest game of the year, the most important game of the year, and giving every player the chance to be fully fit does seem to make a little bit of sense, even though we're experiencing different things this year because it's all the way over in Perth and we're not having a part of it here in Melbourne Town, perhaps.
Yeah, I totally agree with that, Harv. I think that's a great assessment of how it looks. And when you think of what both teams got lucky in the prelims as well, they were able to in the last quarter, in the last half, even protect their star players as well. So, and that probably edges towards the Bulldogs a little bit because they already played. That was their third final, so they're able to rest their players in that last quarter. More time on the bench for them. After what had been a pretty solid final series, especially the week before against the Brisbane Lions, which was an intense final, where Melbourne have had to go through a different path. And that's the only, I suppose, disadvantage in some ways that Melbourne have got to this point, which is great. The fact they haven't played much footy over the last 3 weeks, you know, where does that come into the conversation? We'll only know the answer to that at about 11 p.m. on Saturday night.
I think the other interesting thing about having the bye here as opposed to after the home and away season is that moving forward into the future, I think there is a capacity to make this weekend a festival of footy without there being an AFL grand final. And what I mean by that is that you could have the VFL grand final, you could have the Brownlow, the potential for maybe regional country footy to have prominence on this weekend. You could make it a really big weekend of community footy somehow. I don't know necessarily how you do it, because I'm not sure whether, say, the Ovens and Murray grand final, they'd want it played up in the Ovens and Murray region. They wouldn't necessarily want it played at the MCG or at Docklands.
Want all the grand finals to be played in Melbourne Town?
No, I'm saying, could you have a festival of footy where you had 3 or 4 grand finals on the MCG on the weekend before, or would the regional competitions want to have them in the regions, but could Fox Footy go and broadcast the Ovens and Murray Grand Final or the Mid Murray League or whatever it is, just to give the opportunity for that weekend to showcase community footy?
John, you're a Fox Footy man. Would you want to go up to the Ovens and Murray Grand Final and commentate that game?
Of course, Half. Yes. Yes, I would.
Well, I'm just...
No, I think it's a great idea, Whitey. I really do. And I understand where you're sort of heading with it, because it gives us a week to celebrate.
Yes, exactly. Celebrate
the leagues, celebrate the, you know, whether it is a VFL will have their grand final, the under-18s will have their grand final from the next tier down. You, I don't know where, you know, the Sample and Waffle and all those sit in terms of making it an Australian-wide celebration of football, not just here in Victoria, I think would be the key to all of this with what you're saying.
You could have like a women's State of Origin game, Victoria versus the Ally, or Victoria versus the All-Stars or something like that, because obviously they're out of season, but they're getting into pre-season at the moment, so they have to have some fitness behind them. I just think it's an opportunity to celebrate why Australian football is so good. I mean, if there's still the Sandfall and the Waffle going on and all sorts of other things as well, is that whether there's an opportunity to turn it into a festival of footy for that entire weekend, the Brownlow, sort of the culmination of that on the Sunday night, then get into the main fair for the following week.
I think it's great. I think Half would want to, you know, get centre stage anyway in the EJ Whitten Legends game. No question.
Don't you start, Johnson. Gee, you polish up a treat for those games. Gee, you put some oil on. Do you really oil up?
I admire Tom Hawkins and Joel Selwood all year long, because they're the only two, I think, left in the competition that really lather up on game day. And I love it. Pre-bounce, I'm watching Tom, just the trainers out there just tucking truckloads of oil all over him. And yes, you're right, I used to do it. Because I used to have that mentality half my first contest that my opponent's going to slip off me and I'll get the advantage, seriously. So that's how it plays out.
Taylor Adams from the Magpies. Been a while since we've tracked him down, but he's back with us today. Good morning to you, Taylor.
Good morning, Half. Good morning, team. How are we all?
Mate, we're well. We've missed you. What have you been doing, man?
Well, not a lot, Half, as you'd know. it's been too long, mate. It's been way too long. Glad to be back. Thanks for having me on.
Well, there's a lot to talk about. You got a new coach. Let's go straight there. Craig McRae's come in. He's got a couple of assistants that are well-known to the football community as well. Justin Lipich and Brendan Bolton has come across at this stage. How much have you had to do with Fly at this stage? What's your relationship like?
Yeah, so I was, when I first got to the club back in 2015, Fly was the head of development there. So did quite a bit of work with him. In that sense, you know, I was in my third year of the AFL system, so spent a lot of time with him and Tark and Lockyer working on my game. And he obviously went off and did some pretty awesome things to other clubs, and has now come back with a really, you know, highly credentialed resume now, and been a part of some successful teams and coached his own teams. And it's been crazy how, you know, we've done like a big 360. Only chatted to him briefly. Clearly the circumstances surrounding COVID meant it's a little bit harder to get together as a team. And he's obviously working his way through a few things, you know, putting a team around him, and also we're trying to find a high performance manager as well. So he's been a busy man, but looking forward to catching up properly.
Taylor, with Leppa coming in, he's going to focus, from what he says, on your ball movement and things like that. What would you like to see from a ball movement side of things?
Yeah, I think what we're trying to go for late last year, Jono, was, you know, it's obviously been more attacking and score more. I think we probably starved our forwards of opportunity, going from really slow from our defensive 50 to our forward 50. At times it worked, against some teams it works, but you know, watching footy over the last 3 weeks, you can definitely see the teams that play a really fast, exciting brand that transition the ball quickly are the ones that score well in big moments like the finals, and are really hard to play against. So, no doubt we were certainly on a journey to try to find that and discover that. But looking forward to what Leper and Fly have in store in that sense.
So I'm just interested, Taylor, do you think you'll have much of an involvement in what it looks like moving forward? You're a leader of the footy team. You might be the captain next year. Who knows? We might get to that shortly. But, I mean, are you expecting to be involved in that, or might it just actually be you'll be told what it's going to be like and then you move on from there?
Yeah, I'm pretty keen to stay out of it, to be completely honest. looking forward to seeing what Fly, what he brings. You know, he's come from two different systems. You know, I've been at the One Football Club for 8 years now, so I'm looking forward to something new. And you know, he's got you know, a lot of experience in that sense and been under some great coaches. So, yeah, no doubt that he'll have some things he'll change. I'm sure he'll ask some of the players about what they think, but at the end of the day, it's going to be his program, which I think we need. I think we need really strong guidance. We've got a pretty young group now. We've probably run a really autonomous program over the last 3 or 4 years, but I think the demographic of our group's changed. We're, in terms of our age, you know, we're a lot younger, a lot less experienced. So, yeah, I think guidance is going to be really key to bouncing back up the ladder really quickly.
Taylor, part of that guidance is around the captaincy and the captain of the footy club and the leader, Scott Pendlebury, has been amazing. We all understand that. We understand what Trent Cotchin has done over the last 24 hours in stepping away. If Pendles did make that decision, and he's probably the one that can only do it with the way that he stands within the club and the AFL environment, is that something that is of interest to yourself?
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah, I think Fly's come out publicly and said that it's going to be Pendle's choice with what he does. And yeah, I completely support that. I think he's, you know, obviously externally people make up their mind about players from what they see, but internally I still think he is our best leader, which is a kind of a funny term. Leadership's, you know, a little bit different and subjective. So yeah, I'm still on a bit of a journey. I think you know, I was really challenged this year going through a couple of injuries and you know, sort of, I guess, not quite fell out of love with the game, but found that I was really grinding through the season. So, yeah, to be honest, I'm just looking forward to getting back in there, playing my part for the team early on in the pre-season, hopefully setting some really strong standards and with the way that I come back and the way that I train. And we'll see what happens from there. I'm not going to get caught up in it. I would definitely love to do it at some point in my career, but whether or not it's next year or you know, in the future, then that'll be told soon.
I wanted to ask you, Taylor, about your season, because it was a weird season for you personally, because you missed so much footy through injury, yet when you played extremely well, but you could tell you were just battling with it all mentally. So do you take us a bit more into that, and also now you got to the end of the season, do you just not think about footy, even though we're talking to you now about it? How do you try and get that love back?
Clearly the injuries didn't help. You know, I had a hamstring at the start of the year, come back round one and was probably a little bit underdone, and then battled my way through a few games and finally found some form, and then I hurt my injury, which hurt my knee, which is an injury that I really couldn't do a lot about. So I just felt that, you know, at that stage of the season when, you know, our coach is under fire, the club's been challenged, there's a lot happening off the field, it would have been nice to be out there and play good footy and stand up and lead at that stage, but unfortunately I wasn't able to do that. And I thought my first 4 or 5 weeks in rehab were really good. I was able to get around a lot of the young guys, contribute off the field and play a role there, that you know, didn't mean I had to get kicks, marks or handballs. And then the re-injury, that really challenged me. Probably lost a little bit of motivation. And, yeah, at times I probably found it a little bit too hard, and that's really not something that I've been used to. So, I was – not that I was looking forward to the end of the season, because I was still really enjoying playing. And that was the one thing that I never lost my passion for, was the game day stuff. And the, you know, the competition and the opportunity to go out there and rectify things week in, week out. But, I was definitely challenged mentally throughout the weeks, and you know, I made that really open to the football club, had some great support around me. Got to the end of the year and I'm really excited. I think the change is going to be really, really great for me personally. Not that anything that the football club was doing was bad, but I'm just looking forward to new guidance and being challenged again.
I was keen to flesh that out a bit with you as well, Tade, because you effectively lost two coaches through the year. You lost Bucks midway through, and then Robert Harvey took over and didn't get the job either. So you lose two coaches through a year, and you've had the injury troubles and all that sort of stuff. And you've been there 8 years, and sometimes it can become a bit too routine, and you need that edge, that look, something different to look at, or a different look within the walls when you get there. You're going to get that now. How big a change is it going to be for you? More importantly than, well, because we're talking to you right now, but as so far as the team, more importantly, how big is it going to be for you?
Yeah, well, the way I said half is, you know, everyone sort of starts at zero now. It's an even ledger, and yeah, we've got you know, three new coaches so far, plus a high performance manager that you want to impress. So yeah, all I can do at the moment is train really hard, get myself in a great physical and mental condition so that I come back day one and I'm a real asset to the footy club. And that's where my mind's at now. I certainly feel really refreshed after having the last 3.5 weeks off. It's been, you know, although COVID, the situation surrounding COVID hasn't been ideal for, they can't see mates or family or anything. I've actually really enjoyed just the downtime and getting away from it all and sort of watching from afar. So, yeah, I think, as I said, the change will be really good for me. You know, I had a great relationship with Bucks and Banger. And this time of year is really challenging for football clubs because you see such great people leave. But with that comes opportunity, and I'm just really excited.
Hey, Taylor, with a lot of talk around, you know, the week off this week in the grand final and how the clubs are actually going to approach their training session, especially the one this weekend, a week out from the grand final. As a player, if you're put in that position in terms of a full-on competitive session, what's your mindset going into that?
Don't hurt Bontempelli off the trucker.
That's a great call.
It's a funny one. I was actually thinking about that, Jono. Well, my personal preference would be to go harder earlier this week and then sort of taper off towards the end of the week / start of next week, just to be really fresh and energetic going into the week of training before the big day. So, I dare say, you know, although you want to get a really strong, solid session in before you go out there and play next week, and I'm sure they'll do that on the weekend, you certainly don't want any injuries. So, yeah, just, it's more about getting a feel for, you know, making sure that all the structures and the continuity and the setups and anything that Melbourne might throw at the Bulldogs and vice versa, they'll just focus on making sure that those things are all A1 and then, yeah, making sure that there's no injuries, just, you know, any high balls don't crunch anyone or not falling across anyone's knee, something like, you know, stuff like that where you're just taking care of each other. But I dare say the energy will be right up. It's, and I've been part of it. It's an awesome week going into the grand final week where it's just, yeah, you feel like you're running on air at times.
Very biased to the Doggies this morning. We've had Marcus Bontempelli on. We've got you on. Come on, get that page even. That's from David off the SMS. So we need to just straighten things up. We've had another caller just call through. In fact, Mr. Miyagi has called through.
Lesson for whole life. Whole life. Have a balance. Everything be better. Understand?
We understand, Mr. Miyagi. All of life in balance, everything will be better. So we're going to make the show better.
If you had your time
having
again,
balance.
That would have been played.
My word it was. My word. Because all of life is better when you have balance, so we're going to balance it up. And David Neitz is going to help us balance it up, Jono, the great champion, the former captain, 306 games of excellence in the Melbourne Football Club. He's going to provide, as Mr. Miyagi requested, the balance. Good morning, Nita.
Good morning, Danielson. How are we, guys?
We're going great. Having a hell of a time on a Thursday morning, especially now that you're involved with us. Grand finals for the D's, Nita. Hasn't happened for a while. You were the skipper the last time out. What memories does it bring up for you?
Yeah, look, it's been a hell of a 21 years since we've been in the big show. So, it is a long time and a lot of heartache in between. But I'm excited to be back there where we've wanted to be for such a long time. But look, I guess for me, yeah, it doesn't bring back the best of memories. The build-up was fantastic, but unfortunately for us on game day, we ran into a red-hot Essendon team. That I think Jono's team were the only team to beat them that year, but they were absolutely red-hot in 2000, and we were a long way off the pace.
Nita, where do you find yourself? Did you get your chance to get over to Perth? Did you read the play and get on a plane or get permission to get over there?
No, there's so much talk of fly to Darwin and then go from Darwin. Like Brad Green he's from Tasmania. I can stay with mum and dad for a little while. There's a lot of theories going around, but no, unfortunately, I'll be like all the Melbourne supporters, bunker down at home, but I'm sure that I'll tuck myself away with a couple of beers and hopefully enjoy the viewing.
Does it fill you with a sense of pride, having an involvement with the club? Obviously, not just an involvement, a captain of the club through a grand final campaign, but it's been such a drought for the Ds. But seeing what these guys are putting out there at the moment and the potential to actually be a premiership team, does it fill you with, as a past player, with great pride?
Look, it does. It does. I just think that the way that the club as a whole have gone about it over the past, what has it been? Probably since 2014, 15, around that time where there was a bit of a fork in the road. And I guess Roosie came along, a new president came along. Simon Goodwin was appointed. Todd Viney really looked closely at the list. And the build, I guess, started from there. And to sort of understand what that philosophy was. And then, you sort of start to see the type of players that are playing in the red and blue colours. And I guess that's where it all started. But you've got to actually, you've got to do the hard work and you've got to get on the training track and work on your strategies and all those types of things. To see it all clicking at the moment, good enough to get into the grand final at least, it's enormous.
Nita, are you a little bit nervous and concerned? One game in 21 days and you come out against a team that has the two R's, rhythm and rest. It must make you extremely nervous.
Look, a little bit. It's a little bit unusual, isn't it? It never happened before. It feels unusual as a fan, to be honest, after the high of the preliminary final and then you take a rest as a fan yourself. You want to probably build that momentum into the big game. But look, what I would say about, I guess, the last couple of years, it's just thrown up so many different scenarios, and I think the players are pretty well versed at that. And I, what has developed in me, at least, is just faith and trust in the group that, we may or may not win, but I just know that we're going to perform. You look at Max Gawn and Clayton Oliver and Christian Petrarca, and they're at a high level really, really consistently. So, it doesn't guarantee the victory, but I just got so much faith that we'll perform, we'll bring the pressure, we'll bring the heat, and we'll see whether you doggies can contain it.
Oh, look at this. This is real us against each other.
Actually, Nita, one quick one, Nita. I heard Jack Watts saying yesterday on Fox Footy that there's a past players group that's been put together, a bit of a WhatsApp group. I hear you're not involved, though. What happened there?
I've been left off. Rod Grinter's put that together. It's just fantastic. Guys in the 70s and the 80s, 90s, 2000s, really connected everyone, and there's so much banter going on in that group. It's a lot of fun, a lot of excitement. I think a few of the boys have given halftime speeches, scenarios to inspire the boys, but that's good fun.
I wanted to ask you about that connection because you just mentioned it before, but we've seen Brad Green, who's worked at other footy clubs, really getting back into the passion of Melbourne again. I mean, it's scary to think it's been 13 years since you've played. And I don't think, apart from Nathan Jones, there's anyone on the list that you would have played with. Correct me if I'm wrong there.
No, there's not. No.
Yeah, but so how deep is that connection, that feeling? I mean, do you get nervous before games? Do you still get into, get involved in the club at all?
Oh, look, not really. Look, they've got the David Neath Academy, which is for their first to third year players. So I go down and have a chat to those guys once or twice a year, which is great. And there's six of them playing on the weekend on the prelim final. So there'll be a few of them, young. Well, he's in the mix, Dowie at least. Probably a few selection things to come up during the week, but guys like him and Keziah Pickett, Luke Jackson. There's just Rivers. Trent Rivers. So the whole stack of those young kids that are really young, but they're just performing at a great level. So I guess I've got a bit of a connection through that. And we do have a past player group that catch up at the 10 and have a run or most Saturday mornings. And we had a good session with the current day players earlier this year, where we had bits of hill runs, and, well, probably less hill runs for me, and it was more about the breakfast afterwards. But you know, Goody and Max Thorne orchestrated that, and they were really keen for the players to understand, obviously connection to past players, but really respecting the game and respecting the opportunity that they've got. So, you know, that theme of respect for obviously the past, but also for the game, has been running really strong within the group.
How many Melbourne supporters have come knocking for just looking for access to something needed through the last couple of weeks, or even the last couple of months in the build-up to the finals? Because they're jumping out of trees at the moment in my world, these Melbourne supporters that haven't existed, and all of a sudden they're wearing colours, they're getting tattoos, it's all on.
Right, there's fences painted all over the town. It's just magnificent to see the colours and you know, just shining brightly. And I guess over the past little while, Melbourne supporter would have shunned away a little bit and sort of skipped away from the finals conversations and really wearing their colours proudly. But you know, the group of players and the club have done such a great job, and there's a lot of pride amongst the Demon faithful right now. One more to go, hey? Let's see if we can get it over the line.
What impresses you most about this team?
I think it's just their their evenness. I mean, as much as they've got, you know, two five All Australians is an amazing sort of talented team, but it's their evenness all the way through the group. Their sort of commitment to their role, and I think it's really just the pressure is the key for them. It's all built off that manic kind of pressure. And then, you know, they've got enough faith in themselves that there's enough talent that'll sort of push them through. But it's all based off that real grunt effort, which is a great base for playing footy, and particularly finals footy.
Nita, did you know last week in the prelim final that it was game over when Max took a mark 45 metres out, played on and snapped it over his left shoulder?
There was a little bit of celebration going on. It was all pretty exciting. I run a beer company these days called I'll Prop Plug Myself, Brumanity Beer Company, and we've got a new beer out, the Mouth of the South. So make sure, you know, all the Demons fans get hold of the Mouth of the South before the big game. But look, I was doing a hell of a lot of sampling, and by the time Maxi snapped that goal, I was very excited.
Well, it's not just a great brew, the Mouth of the South, and one of the other beers you get involved in there at Brewmanity, but you're raising money for MND as well. Is that through a Melbourne connection, or is that just another little side thing that came along?
No, it's how we started the beer company, to be honest.
Right.
I was interested in one of my mates worked for one of the bigger beer companies, and we'd spoken a few times, you know, one of these days let's create our own beer company. Which probably would never have happened, but when Neil Danaher started raising funds for Fight MND, we said, oh, look, we've always spoken about it. Let's put a beer out there and raise some money for Neil. So that was back in 2015. So, yeah, we've raised about $275,000 so far for the cause.
Was it?
Awesome. So each beer, a little bit goes back to Fight MND with each beer. So we just committed to continually supporting obviously Neil and what he does and supporting all the people that are suffering with MNDs and their families.
Yeah, we're seeing a few Brewmanity signs around town, and I know the brewery's sort of coming together down near Bell's Hotel. It's not far away, is it, for becoming a big deal?
No, that's right. So it's only been seven years in the making. The brewery, we've got a little patch of dirt in South Melbourne, which we'll put a brewery and a lovely bar and a rooftop, city views. It'll be epic once it's done. But it's probably going to be March or something next year, I'd say, somewhere around that time. So look out for that as well.
Well, Nita, you've done well there. You've brought it up nicely, and then half and wide, you've run with it for the last 5 minutes. So you've got a good point.
He's done a good job, hasn't he?
At the end of the day.
It's a small point,
you know. Look after you, Jono.
That's brilliant, Nita. I love it. Now, how do you see this midfield battle playing out as a whole, mate? Because this is where the game, especially around centre bounce, I think it'll be won or lost.
Look, it is. And I suppose for us, we'll take some cues out of particularly the first game that we played. We really clamped down on Liberatore and really went to work at the source. And I think that's critical from well, I'll be a bit biased from a Melbourne perspective. I think the Bulldogs, their run on the outside is elite. I mean, both midfields are elite, but I think Melbourne has to dominate it at the source. If it gets on the outside, that makes it a bit more difficult, and good service, obviously, into Big Norton and the forwards down there. So I think that's the critical part.
That was the best of the Breakfast Club. If you want to hear the full interviews again, go straight to the website, rsn.net.au.